This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Copper Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boost.
This game's still alive and the Hawks have a first down.
Who wants to talk football?
It's Ronnie Wingo, number 20. Touchdown, Arkansas.
They talked the bar.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
We'll start and discuss just Arkansas's victory last night against the Vanderbilt Commodores at home in Bud Walton Arena, 69-66. And honestly, this was such a strange game. I feel like all the games are strange for the Razorbacks, but it was always about to see how would they respond after that great victory on the road against LSU. Going down there, having an 18-point lead at one point, giving it away, but still finding a way to get the victory. How would this team respond? How would they keep it going? Well, it started off slow and sluggish for the Razorbacks, just like in classic fashion. They really build themselves back to get there in the second half, where they, I believe they had a 10-point lead was the most they led by.
About 10 minutes to go, they had a 10-point lead.
Yep, and then it diminished. And Vanderbilt took the lead late in the game off of three. But then when they were down, when Razorbacks were down by two, with under 30 seconds to go, the guy that we all thought would make the biggest play of the game made the biggest play of the game.
10 to shoot. Inside, bounce pass, Gafford, double team, kick out. Keyshawn, three is good. Embry Simpson with a three, 14 seconds to go. Hogs up 67-66. 67-66, Vandy's not going to call a timeout. We got an offensive foul. Saban Lee pushed off his fifth foul of the game, and Arkansas is going to get the ball with 8.2 to go.
So just like we all thought, Keyshawn Embry-Simpson will hit the go-ahead shot, but what a big shot wide open and a great move there by Gafford, where the team triple-teamed him underneath, kicked it out to his open man, hit the big shot.
Well, they went to Joe on the left side, nothing there, into Gafford, back outside, and then reworked it to the post a second time. And as you said, the defense collapsed inside on Gafford, and he wisely saw a wide-open Keyshawn Embry-Simpson, who just off the right elbow just cranked it. And it was, it's nice to see him the last couple of games really step up and start coming into his own.
Yeah, I mean, they need all the help they can get, especially from the bench play.
You look at his, 7 points?
He's had 5 points.
5 points, yeah. 5 points for this game. But the biggest three of the game was three of his five.
Yeah, so, I mean, he hit it when it mattered the most. And see, and this is why that play right there is why so many people like us here on the show and others have been saying how important it is to get the ball to Daniel Gafford on almost every offensive possession you can. Because not just of him getting it and making a play and going to the basket, but the type of defense that he draws in. Because when that ball went in, they knew that they wanted to get the ball to Gafford. Because most teams are like this, folks. They want to get the ball to their best player on the court to make a play when the game's on the line. So when you throw it into him, that defense collapsed on him. Why? Because they knew that he was going to try to make a play and they were going to do whatever it took to keep him from making that play. So when a defense collapsed, Tommy, I know you know this because you know basketball. When a defense collapses, that usually leaves somebody open.
It's simple math, right?
That's right.
It's 5-on-5, and if three players are on one, well,
someone's open.
Maybe two people.
Yes, that's right, and that's exactly what happened.
Because Isaiah Joe didn't have much over on the left side. That's why the ball had to go inside.
Yeah. So pretty much that, Daniel Gafford had his options, but he hit the right guy.
And they continued to work it to Gafford throughout most of the second half. And really some of those bounce passes were taken away. Arkansas, from a turnover standpoint, had 18 turnovers in the game last night. Way too many. Several of those were on entry passes to the post that were deflected, knocked away. Some bounce passes into the post that were stolen. Teams are starting to pick up defensively those entry passes and get to them. That's something Arkansas is going to have to figure out with certain teams that are not just defending Gafford, but defending the entry pass to get it to Gafford, which created some of the turnovers last night.
Well, it makes me think, too, because
I was just saying that because lucky that on that final possession, the entry pass wasn't deflected, tipped, stolen, something happened with it.
Right, because we laid it out on Monday about the path that Arkansas needs to be on and what they need to do to be able to at least be in the conversation of a possible bubble team for the NCAA tournament. And this, of course, was one of those games that you had to win. But it makes me wonder, okay, so at what point, at what game, at what stage does the Razorbacks get into when you start thinking, okay, this right here, this is a team that's got it going on. Because right now, I still don't trust them.
No, you're halfway through conference play.
You're
5-4 in league play, and you're on pace to win the number of games we believe is critical to win, 10.
Yep.
You're 5-4 halfway through. So if you can duplicate in the second half what you've done in the first half, then, you know, it's very possible. We've went over it. Next two games are on the road. One of them, I think, is very winnable at Missouri. You got to play South Carolina this weekend, next Tuesday night at Missouri, and then you come home for Mississippi State before you go on the road to Auburn. So three of the next four are on the road. Could you split those four games? That'd be huge. You know, to expect Arkansas to win the next four after being on the conference win streak they've been on, which is, what, four straight in conference play. I know you got that Texas Tech game that is mixed in there where they did play very well. But you need to go 2-2 in these next four over the next couple of weeks. So very important you do that.
Is this team better right now than what they were to start the year?
No, absolutely.
Like, I mean, so you feel like they're playing their best basketball right now of the season?
I don't know if it's their best. Maybe their best is yet to come.
What you're hoping for.
Last night I didn't think was their best basketball. I mean, when basically all of your scoring, and I know the shot from Embry Simpson that was the difference maker at the end, but as we said earlier, he had 5 points in the game. This game was all about Daniel Gafford and Isaiah Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Listening to Chuck and Coach Z a little bit, there was a mention with when Arkansas early in the second half had gotten their point total to 38. Halftime score, by the way, was 35-34 Vanderbilt. They'd cut it to that. You know, Vanderbilt had a 10-point first-half lead. But at one point there, early in the second half, Arkansas put their 38th point on the board. 35 of those 38 belonged to Daniel Gafford or Isaiah Joe. So they were not getting a lot of help. Now, they got a little more help in the second half, but that was, to me, not an indicator of, hey, this is one of their best games. This was really good basketball played by Arkansas last night. It was not that. They still managed to win, not playing their A game.
And it was amazing, too, because we mentioned Isaiah Joe.
Gafford and Joe may have played their A game, but as a team, not so much.
Well, I'm telling you right now, if you can get 6 3-pointers out of Isaiah Joe on the daily basis, I'm sure you'll be in great shape. But, I mean, do you think about it? He was the one that closed out the half because Vanderbilt had a one-point lead. Mm-hmm. But if he hit 4 threes in the final 3 minutes of the first half. So just imagine where Arkansas would have been without that.
And maybe you make the case, well, Kraft, why wouldn't you give it to the guy with a hot hand and Isaiah Joe? Well, of course you would. And that would limit score. Arkansas's best basketball is not when you score under 70. It's when everybody's getting that free chicken because you scored 70 or more.
That's right.
And I'm sure ending up 1 point short of that and left some people, let's just say, hungry for more last night.
Hmm. You know? Saw what you did there. Yeah. That was pretty good.
Yeah, 1 point short.
Yeah.
Could have got that free chicken.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you right now, and I think we all agree, that if they can't play that way on the road and beat South Carolina, they can't play that way on the road and beat Missouri. They just can't do it. But a win is a win is a win. In this league and in basketball, no one's going to look at the end of the season when the committee's getting together, hey, what do you think about Arkansas? Well, they only beat Vanderbilt by 3. No one's going to say that. It's just about getting the win. But can you get better from it? Can you grow from it? Can you improve on it? Because your schedule does not get any easier this way going forward.
You got to win all 4 of your remaining home games.
Have to.
That'd get you to 9. We talk about the road victory you could get at Missouri. That would get you to 10. Then you got other road games still to come at Auburn, at Kentucky. You know, so, I mean, you just got to continue to win. Vanderbilt again. So.
Just win the games you're supposed to win.
Make sure I'm counting. I mean, 1, 2, 3.
They got 9 regular. Yeah. 4.
I know that. I was just counting it. But 4 of them are at home. So, I go win. Got to go win those home games.
Yep.
That's not going to be easy. You got Mississippi State, a good team coming in here. A&M is very winnable. Ole Miss, I think, right now. It wasn't a couple of weeks ago. Ole Miss is a beatable team. And then you end it all with Alabama. Beatable team. So there's none of those games that you don't have Tennessee coming here.
No.
Auburn's not what we thought they were. You got to go to Auburn. So, I mean, Arkansas, theoretically, if they play well, could end up with 11 or 12. Now, I don't think that will happen. I don't think they'll be able to sustain this for 9 more games. But I do think they can be better than 500 in conference play.
Well, if they found a way to get to 11 or 12 wins in conference play, They're in the tournament.
And they deserve to be.
Yeah, I think but, that everyone.
I mean, that's all we're talking about. We're not saying this. This is the path to get to the NCAA tournament.
That's right.
The bare minimum has got to get to 10 wins. I think if you get 11 or 12, I think that's right now. I don't see that as a likelihood, but that puts you inside the top five, maybe six in the league. If you're at that point, the committee's going to put you in.
Follow the show on Twitter at HitThatLineAR. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
I think we put too much emphasis on current season record and how it affects recruiting. Obviously, you can't string a couple 2- and 3-win seasons together and continue to keep your recruiting high, but you're right, coming off a 2-win season, pretty phenomenal.
I'll tell you this, I'd have more faith in teams that won 9 or 10 and getting top 25 recruiting classes than teams that won 2.
Yeah.
But yes, the one thing I think that really pitched to a lot of these kids were, not only are you going to come in and play right away, but you're not going to be on special teams. You're going to be like guy 1 or 2 at every spot. But I mean, still, man, to be able to come into Arkansas, because across the board, outside of baseball, of course, but in the two big sports, in basketball and football, it seems like we always come back to one common denominator and why we say that they struggle. And what do we say all the time? Man, they needed to get this other recruit. They need to get this other power forward or shooting guard. They need to get this quarterback. They need to get this wide receiver, linebacker. And for a guy to come in and a guy to come from SMU and to come into Arkansas and do the things he's done in recruiting year one, and they won 2 games, that's pretty impressive. But I will say this, though. Now he's set the tone, and we don't expect you to be in the 40s next year or the 50s the year after that or you know, the 30s. He set the tone, and he set the bar, and now Arkansas fans expect this level of recruit or better going forward, and that's what it's going to take for Arkansas to not go 2-10.
Well, if you want to really break it down, of the top 30 teams in recruiting rankings, there's only one of them that is coming off a losing season, and that's Arkansas.
Wow.
Just one.
And Arkansas wasn't even close.
No, theirs was more than a losing season.
Yeah.
Theirs was just an all-time
worst season
horrendous.
In school history.
Yeah, an all-time horrendous season. And yeah. that's where it's like, you know, people who have talked about, you know, the criticisms of Chad Morris and, you know, why aren't more people criticizing him for going 2-10 and the worst season ever, and there was no semblance of any type of future, which I understand those criticisms, but where people are holding out hope is in his ability to recruit this way.
Yes, and people also understand it doesn't matter what you say right now. This is year one. I mean, I'm not even sure if he went – I don't know if there's anything on the field he could have done last year to be fired.
And, no, yeah.
And I think people kind of realize that too. And now the recruiting helps, and the recruiting makes you very optimistic about the future. But I think a lot of it is a lot of people are saying year one, and then there's still a bad taste in people's mouth from Brett Bielema. So 50% of the fan base is just blaming him.
Well, can you imagine following a 2-win season with a number 42 class in the country, what the sentiment from the fans would be right now?
Oh, I just shut it down.
Yesterday, the season ticket renewal forms came out. Got them in the mailbox. If you hadn't got yours, it's coming. If you're a season ticket holder out there. Can you imagine? That's like the most important thing right now to renew season tickets is recruiting. Because what else are you clinging on to? What else are you hopeful for in the future other than this group of incoming players? That's the thing that's going to keep, I think, a lot of people in the fold. And I still think you're going to see a lot of folks still drop out. I think the last 2 years has been tough when it comes to ticket renewals. Now the new tax laws where your donations are not deductible. There's just a lot of things playing against Arkansas right now. Now is not the time to be losing more than you're winning on the field. It just makes it more and more difficult. So not just because of that, but financially it makes it harder on your institution. And this recruiting class is all you have to cling on to if you're a football fan.
And that's the way you get out of this jam that you're in is by recruiting. I mean, you got to get players in there. It's as simple as that. And I think that those people who are still skeptical of Chad Morrison, rightfully so, because you don't go 2-10 and not have some questions, not have some serious doubts about whether or not he can find his way out of this mess and be able to make Arkansas into a successful program. But that's the thing, is when you see the job he's doing in recruiting, your hope in all this is that, wow, if he's doing this after a 2-10 year, imagine how good he could be if he's coming off an 8-4 year or a 9-3 year, where he's actually starting to show and prove that this is a successful job and a successful program. Because right now, like, what can he sell about the program itself to these guys? Well, it's a matter of relationships and playing time. I get that. But he can't say, hey, he can't point to something circle and say, this is why it's going to be successful right now.
It'll also help if down the road you have more number one players at their positions living in your state, Hudson Henry. That didn't hurt that you got a guy that's, by some services, 5-star, 4-star by everybody else, that, you know, his brothers have played at the have played at the University of Arkansas. So you need more things like that to fall your way.
Yeah, I mean,
without players like that, you don't have this kind of ranking.
Well, and luck goes a long way in all this, too, because how many times have we brought up that, as great of a coach Bobby Petrino was, there was no doubt that he lucked out from the Warren Lumberjacks having players like Jarius Wright, mm-hmm. Greg Childs, and Chris Gregg come out of the same class.
Yep.
Having a Joe Adams coming out of Little Rock. Because if without those guys from that class, and also Ryan Mallett transferring, Tyler
Wilson making the decision to come to Arkansas. Yeah. I mean, you just keep going down a list.
Sometimes it's better to be lucky and good. And in recruiting, if you have a great in-state, and that's why it's so important to keep the kids in-state, is because you don't have them very often, but when you do, you can see the difference that it makes. You can see how much it can benefit you and help you out. I'm not saying every player has panned out that was highly recruited coming out of Arkansas. We know a lot of them that didn't. But it's just a matter of, okay, can you recruit the state of Arkansas, and can you go outside the state and recruit really well as well? That was one thing that it came down to, the demise of Brett Bielema, where, okay, he was getting a couple in-state guys here and there, but there was nobody outside the state that he was getting besides his first year in Florida.
Can he really prove that Texas can be a place he can get good players?
That's important.
And I don't expect him to get the best in Texas. That's not going to happen. Longhorns are going to get more than their fair share. The Aggies, being in the SEC, they're going to get their fair share.
Alabama, Georgia.
Well, yeah. LSU's going to come over right over the border and get some. You mentioned the national programs like Alabama. They're going to come in there, Georgia. But can you go in there and compete with Oklahoma and Oklahoma State? Because they're coming in there too. There's tons of great players in Texas. That's going to be the difference between this guy being a long-term successful coach at Arkansas and his tenure being much like his predecessors, 4 to 6 years, and on to the next guy.
Well, and my question is, so this is all great that he's getting all these kids. What's the timeline on this? Because we're talking about football, not basketball. So you getting a Daniel Gafford in basketball, he can play 13, 14 games, and then all of a sudden it can click, and then he has 17 more to kind of feel his way out. And so by year two or even by year one, you're getting impact guys. This is football, though, in the best league in the country. Yeah. So even with all this stuff happening, you still got a lot of the same guys that went 2-10.
Yeah, you do. You do.
So what's the time frame on even getting all these guys in here? What's the time frame? So is his recruiting – last year, there's no way that can be the reason why you're optimistic about next year. Because there's no way that you think that all these freshmen that were playing in high school last year are going to be that much better than everybody else that was at every position that the Razorbacks had last year.
I don't know if it's necessarily from the talent perspective that people feel that way, but I do believe that there are people, right or wrong, disagree with them, but this is just how they feel, that just them coming in and not having the culture from leftover from Brett Bielema, not being Brett Bielema's guys. There's people that feel like that is beneficial within itself because of the stain that they have for not only the culture that Brett Bielema left behind, but there was no doubt that there were serious issues going on in the locker room last year with a lot of former Brett Bielema players. And I think that, right or wrong, again, but I think fans look at that and say, even if they're not as talented as what they could have from the guys that are from last year, the year before, or whatever, even if they're not as talented, those 2-10 guys, they would rather have true freshmen who are raw, who have not who are Trad Morris's guys in there rather than have a junior or senior Brett Bielema guy.
And I understand that, but I'm asking, what's telling me that they're not going 2-10 again?
I guess that the only thing you can really bank on is that they have,
because
everybody from last year gets better.
Right. Because I'm telling you, the culture isn't the reason why Arkansas couldn't block nobody.
No.
The culture isn't the reason why
they didn't have a lot of talent.
Why Santos couldn't cover anybody. Like, that wasn't culture. That was more of a talent. And then you say, well, Nick, you're bringing in 4 stars and you're bringing in a lot of these guys. And I understand that. But I'm just
you're
not,
hoping you're upgrading your talent. That's what today is supposed to be all about, is upgrading talent.
But is a 4-star freshman that's coming to Arkansas better than a junior or a senior that has been here that has experience?
God, I hope so.
That's what you're hoping for.
I mean, because some of these guys that have been playing the last couple of years particularly in the offensive line, not getting the job done.
Right. And horrible. If that's the case, are you going to,
the wide receivers last year.
Are you going to, so
as a whole?
15 or 16 of these guys are going to be better than 15 or 16 guys. I mean, like, that's just, I just don't know how realistic that is.
Here's the thing. Are you thinking this thing's going to get turned around next in the 2019 year?
But I'm asking, though, how much further are we going to be away from 2? Because, you can't win 2 games. That just can't happen.
But if you're thinking they're going to win 10, you're crazy, too.
Well, I'm not saying that either. But, how much further away are they from 2?
Well, they're closer to 2 than they are 10. Yeah. But I think this is it's a team that, it's a wide range. But 4 to 6 wins next year, I think, is realistic. You can't go 2 or 3 wins again, particularly with this schedule, because you don't have another Power 5 non-conference game on the schedule like you were supposed to have had last year with Michigan. And then
there goes 3. So
you ought to be 4 right there at least.
Yeah. That's what you're hoping for.
I mean, I think this should be a program that should win, has to get their first SEC win under Chad Morris. Can't be like a Bielema deal where you go deep into the second season before you get that, what was it, the LSU win that became his notable first SEC victory. It's got to be,
But they went 6-6 that year. And I think that's how most people would feel. If they went 6-6 this year, it's not going to be everyone's just going to be pumped up, excited, but it's at least going in the right direction.
6-6 with another top 20 class.
Oh, yeah, everybody be pumped. If you go 6-6.
Well, I'm saying about the overall general picture, though. It'll be excited about where you're going, but people are still going to be skeptical.
I mean, again, you just break it down. To get to 8-4 means you have to win all of your non-conference games.
Have to.
And we know that 2020, like the non-conference schedule, gets back to a normal non-conference schedule. Is it 20 that Notre Dame's on?
That's
and then
right.
21
Notre
Texas
Dame.
Is on? And then I lose track. 22,
I believe, is when you go to BYU.
Okay. I mean, and then 2025 is the other Notre Dame trip. I mean, so you get back to a little more of a routine non-conference schedule. This is your last kind of year with a reprieve, and Chad Morris couldn't have timed it any better in regards to that. But let's just say you're successful against Notre Dame, team right now that's been in the bid for the college football playoff. Let's just say you find a way to still win 4 non-conference games. You've still got to knock off 4 SEC opponents to go 8-4. That's just to go 8-4.
Find me those 4 SEC teams.
And Ole Miss isn't going to be down forever, and you didn't beat them last year.
Nope.
With all the problems they got around the program.
Didn't beat anybody last year. I don't know. It's just not going to be any easier, though.
Yeah,
they
go to
sure.
an upswing Kentucky program this coming season.
Yeah.
I mean, winning 4 in this league is more difficult than you think, and that's not settling for mediocrity. It just tells you how far away you are from winning 10 or 11 again.
Yeah.
Got a long ways to go to get back to that level.
Subscribe to Hit That Line on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle. And Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas. 80 yards.
We do it every Wednesday. It's called What's Your Beef Wednesday?
What is wrong with you?
I want to complain.
I'm complaining.
I want to complain about
complaining.
I want to complain.
It really pisses me off today.
To simply listen to people whine and complain.
I'm angry. I'm spitting angry. I'm like a tornado of anger.
swirling about. My heart rate is dangerously high right now.
I'm complaining because not enough people tickle, hug, or smile.
I'm so mad I could eat ball bearings and crap BBs.
It's time for What's Your Beef Wednesday.
All right, I'll kick it off here. I'm beefed and tired of all the Super Bowl complainers. It's the Super Bowl. Not every year is going to be a wonderful game that comes down to the wire where we get a wonderful result with a last-second interception like we had a few years ago with the Patriots and Seahawks. Not every year is going to be a game. And this year was a little bit different. If you don't understand or don't like good defensive football, I'm sorry. It was still a good football game. Was it an exciting, high-scoring game? Of course it wasn't. But there's more to the game than just each team scoring 42 points. This was still an entertaining game that until the last few minutes was a one-possession game the whole way. I mean, if I told you you were going to get to watch a football game and it was a one-score difference for 58 minutes, are you not signing up for that?
Yeah, one of the best.
I just don't understand all of the complaints, all of the griping about the Super Bowl when it really kept you on the edge of your seat because you didn't know who was going to win until the final few minutes.
One of the best college football games I've ever seen is LSU-Alabama 2011, where LSU beat Bama in Bryant-Denny Stadium, and there were some people outside of the SEC that was like, this is one of the worst football games I've ever seen. There is a difference between a bad football game like Virginia Tech and I think it was Wake Forest that went into overtime 0-0 a couple years back, and then good defensive football. It's okay every once in a while that it's not a high-scoring affair.
It's not your preference. You would probably do. Obviously, all of us would have preferred to see a few more points.
But you hate like 55-50 games.
That's bad football.
Yeah.
I mean, some of this Big 12 stuff is bad. Folks, it's just bad football because there's no defense. That is bad football. The Super Bowl kept you engaged because by either team could have made the difference in who was going to win or lose until, 4 minutes to go, whatever it was?
Yeah, when Gostkowski hit that field goal.
To me, that's the definition of a great game.
The only reason why I don't agree that it was that's a definite, because the Rams, like, they weren't coming in with a top 15 defense. They weren't even coming in with a top 25 defense. I think they were 26 to be exact. Mm-hmm. But, and so you wanted to see them at their best, which is scoring points, and they punted on like the first 8 or 9 times they got the ball. So I think that was more. I do agree with you. Just because it's a defensive battle doesn't mean it's bad football.
Right.
But I didn't like it because I wanted to see the Rams scoring because that's what the Rams do.
Right.
And they couldn't score.
Nick, what is your beef?
I don't know if my beef is with Chick-fil-A or with the people that go to Chick-fil-A. Either Chick-fil-A puts crack cocaine in their in their chicken.
Well,
or is the people.
There does seem to be a lot of demand for their product.
Like, the only time I like going through Chick-fil-A drive-thru is on Sundays. That's the only time I can just drive right on.
Oh,
like,
you got
to
get.
I can drive right up to the window.
Yeah.
I can drive right on.
And you watch out for the guy pressure washing.
Yeah. And it's just like, people, we all stop acting like Chick-fil-A is handing out gold bars. And I guess you can say, well, why are you there at Chick-fil-A if they're not handing out gold bars? Every time I'm coming home and I call my daughter and I call my fiance, I'm like, hey, what do you want? My daughter wants something from Chick-fil-A. And so I go
closed.
To the Chick-fil-A.
Sorry, baby, they're closed.
Yeah. I go to the Chick-fil-A that's right by the mall in Fayetteville. And so if you know that Chick-fil-A, which I know all of you in Northwest Arkansas do, every time I get there, where you turn in, where like the bookstore is and back, almost pushing back to, I think that's Applebee's or whatever, the line's all the way back there. All the way back there.
They
so,
do a good job, though, of getting you.
Hold on. No. I'm going to tell you this. They lie and tell you that, oh, we can get you in and out in 5 minutes no matter what.
Yeah.
So I start timing them. What they do is they have so many checkpoints that you think you're going somewhere and you're not really going anywhere. They have a person that comes up to your car, then another person that catch you over here, person at the window, then they say pull forward. And they have you moving so much that you think you're going faster than what you are. And you're really not.
And they don't cheat you on ketchup either.
No. They haven't done that. So, Chick-fil-A, stop putting crack cocaine in your food.
It's good stuff, though. All right, Ty, we're bringing you in. Bring in the righty for neighbors here. Going to the bullpen.
Do my best. It's a big position. Mine is Boston sports fans that complain about anything.
They have nothing to complain about.
Look at the Patriots. Six Super Bowls since 2001.
Six that they've won.
Six that they've won. Nine that they've been in.
Yeah.
Boston Red Sox, four World Series championships. They've won. 2004, 2007, 2013, 2018. Celtics won in 28. They were there in 2010. And the Boston Bruins won a championship in 2013.
That's 12 championships.
Tommy, Nick, these people have nothing to complain about.
No.
Nothing. And it's the city of champions. I think that title town is Green Bay, and there's other cities with adages like that. But these fans have nothing to complain about. Nothing.
But they do.
The Red Sox are going to be pretty good again this year. I don't know about the Bruins. I don't know anything about hockey. Patriots are going to be one of the top three odds going back to the Super Bowl again next year. I mean, they are so good.
And the Celtics are going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals, if not the NBA Finals.
At least. They won 8 of 9. It's unbelievable to live in. My great uncle, Fontaine, lives in that city. And I can't even fathom what it would be like to be around that excellence all the time in sports.
And not only that, but, of course, I'm a basketball guy. Not only that, then the Celtics have, like, 10 first-round picks.
Yeah, they got a lot. They got 17 championships, trying to get 18 this year. So, I just, like, Arkansas fans,
I'm with you.
You have a reason to complain sometimes. Other cities that kind of had chances to get to championship hadn't had. Boston sports fans who complain, that you'll occasionally see on social media, complain about their team, have nothing to complain about. Because the excellence is just...
Well, we see any market, be it L.A., be it New York. I mean, New York's got, like, double the chances because they got... two baseball teams, two football teams, two basketball teams.
Have you seen the basketball and the football in New York?
But they've got double the. Yeah. I mean, it's like going to the horse races. So going down to Oakland, you got 1 and 1A coming out of the. You get double for your money.
So on that,
will we ever see a city or a market have this kind of run over a 15-year or so period?
They have the most championships of any of the big markets between like L.A., Chicago, Boston because of the Yankees back in the day. Their dominance. But just all the sports combined since 2000, that is an unbelievable statistic if you add those all up. It's incredible. So
it's a hell of a 20-year run.
Oh, my goodness,
for
And it's not over. I mean, the Red Sox are with Cora. I mean, you got Benintendi, who might start a big deal. I mean, they have studs all over the field. The Celtics, as we mentioned, like they got a bunch of young players.
They got a bunch of young guys, and they got 100 first-round draft picks.
Yeah, Brady's supposed to play until he's 45. It's not like this is – it's done. It's still going, man. And then, so that's my beef. Anyway, anytime I see a Boston sports fan complain on Twitter, I just want to slap them through my phone. So
put them in the same boat as the Alabama sports fan.
Alabama,
or the Alabama football.
Like, fire everyone after you have all these Alabama fans come out. I'm never going to an Alabama game again after what I saw Clemson do. I just looked at you for a sec. I was like,
fire everyone.
You know what we would give just for a fraction of that success here at Arkansas? You have any idea?
Sell your soul. I'm sure most Arkansas fans would sell their soul to have the same success that Alabama has had under Nick Saban these past few years.
Somebody would. I don't know if I say most, but
know,
no.
Everyone.
But real talk, somebody would.
You have those crazy fans who'd be like, yeah, somebody I'll sacrifice
would. I'd spend a few years on probation for it.
Absolutely. Like, we always talk about this with
I'd do that for free.
With Ole Miss. You think those fans would give up what they did in that stretch for the sanctions to be taken back? Absolutely not.
How'd they do in the SEC? They didn't play in the SEC championship game.
Yeah. It's a wine intervention, man.
Yeah.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod and Ruskin is Ranting podcast on HitThatLine.com.